Good evening. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and you are listening to the Elchar Chronicles. I am your host, Karen Elchar. This program chronicles issues of law and order and our local justice system, the environment, and indigenous issues with guests that dig deep into topics less talked about here in the Lehigh Valley. This evening, I am very pleased to welcome two guests. We have Brent Chancellor, Executive Director and Assistant Conductor of the Reading Symphony Orchestra, and Maddie Yang, a junior in high school at Moravian Academy in Bethlehem, and is also host with WDIY for Environmental Minute and Roots and Resilience. So good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And good evening to both of you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So our discussion focuses on a very novel concept which may change our understanding of plants, combining science, technology, and music. So thank you for joining me. And Brett, let me start with you. You had an idea which yielded a very interesting recording entitled The Secret Symphony of Plants. So can you explain the project and what inspired you to undertake it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I run a series called the New Music Series up at Art Park, which is in Lewiston, New York, along the Niagara River. And I had met what would become my potential collaborator through a friend, another artist. And, you know, we had gotten onto the subject of mushrooms making music, which is started to be experimented or thought about with composers like John Cage in the 70s. And experimented on, and a number of people had, you know, connected electrodes to mushrooms and created music with analog synthesizers, and we thought that was just a really fascinating thing to be happening. We're both, you know, pretty into nature and the concept of plant life and just life in general, communicating in various ways that maybe we don't totally understand as normal humans. And we thought, oh, maybe this would be a project to bring to Art Park in some way. Art Park happened to be having their 50th anniversary season the same year. So over time, we thought maybe we could do an installation where we have, you know, plants creating music in the park. So Art Park is actually part of a state park in the Niagara area. And so we thought if we could connect all these plants to electrodes and have the plants making music, people could be walking through the forest and hear the plants. That eventually evolved into us thinking, well, could we add a human component to it where there becomes a dialogue between artists and plant, in nature? And we got the idea to commission five new works, one work for each decade of Art Park's celebration. And it kind of just started evolving from there to the point that we did an installation on Art Park grounds for a couple of their festivals. One was the Fairy Festival, and we would, you know, hide speakers throughout the forest that were connected to the electrodes that were processing the plant information, and then those would be playing as people were in the forest for the other activities. And it became a real transformative experience, I think, for a lot of people because they never really thought of the concept of plants producing information like that or music, essentially. And once we did that portion of the installation, we then took some of those sounds and the information that the plants produced and gave those to our five composers, myself being one of them, and asked those composers to create new works for orchestra or chamber orchestra based on that information or their experience with that whole process. And it turned out to be, I think, a really fascinating process for everyone, including the audience and especially including, you know, people who now started to hear the music in the recorded version, which we all just found very, very exciting and unique in terms of a compositional and artistic process.
So when you hooked up electrodes, et cetera, to the plants, who actually did that? And do you have a background in technology, or how did that work?
So I technology in terms of music instruments, yes. So there are the two collaborators that really were working on this with me were Coco Riley and Sophie Baudry, who are also musicians and creators and work with synthesizers. And Coco actually brought a few machines that basically you connect electrodes to the plant leaf or some portion of the plant, kind of like, you know, if you get an EKG when you go to a doctor and they put electrodes on your body and measure impulses, the electrical impulses. Those plant impulses are then processed into MIDI data, which then that MIDI data can be assigned a sound. And so you're almost kind of coloring the sound similar to how NASA colors images of space, right? So they're collecting really high frequency information that we can't see with the human eye. So then there, an artist goes in and assigns different colors to different light frequencies. And that's how we end up seeing the images of space. We're doing a similar process where we're collecting the MIDI data that the plants are producing, and then we're assigning sounds to the MIDI data, essentially coloring it in for the human interactive portion.
When you approached different composers, what was their reaction? Were they surprised? Were they, well, I won't say aghast, but you know, something that's totally different for them, perhaps?
I think it was exciting because we also, you know, we tried to involve composers that come from various backgrounds of musical composition. So we had a couple who were pretty much steeped in electronic music. Caitlin Aurelia Smith was one of them. She primarily does a lot of electronic music. John Kafer is another composer. He does a lot of film music, you know, but he's Juilliard and Yale trained, so he's a real serious composer. So it was, you know, I remember him saying, oh, this is going to be so exciting because I get to do a real concert, you know, art piece now.
Wow.
Ricardo Romanero had already done a few projects with plant work in, I think, the Botanical Gardens in Brooklyn, but his efforts were not quite the same previously as what we were asking to do, where we're saying compose a piece of music based on your experience with this. And then Marcus Foster also does a lot of electronic music with dance and movement, so we thought he would be a really unique voice in the sense that he's kind of used to working with movement, and in some way we're working with movement. It's just, it's not human bodies, it's plant electronics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, ultimately all of these pieces that were composed had to be turned into notes and scores for a standard orchestra to read. But I think almost every one of them was really excited about the process and the idea of composing this as a dialogue. You know, we didn't ask them to just copy or orchestrate what they heard. We said, we were interested in the dialogue between humans and plants and nature and what those responses might be. So it's more of a conversation which allows, you know, the composers and the artists to be able to have a more creative process and kind of respond from a point of creativity rather than mechanics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing. So I'm curious, what specific types of plants were used? Like, did you use a wide variety, a specific species, native plants? What kind of plants were involved, and what were your findings surrounding those plants?
So there were five that ended up getting into the final mix. We had sampled a few others, but they were all plants that were on the grounds of Art Park in spring. Some of them are native, some of them are not native. So we used speedwell, moss, buckthorn. Buckthorn is an invasive species, wild leeks, and black cherry.
Gotcha.
And it was interesting because one of the things we noticed was the smaller the plant, the more activity, or the closer, the kind of the more jittery. So things like moss or, you know, tiny flowers, little sprouts would have lots of, you know, things happening. And the larger broadleaf plants would kind of be slower moving. So they would almost mimic their physical form in terms of the electrical output that we were getting on the data.
That's interesting. So what specifically kind of scientific research that you've come across through this process supports the idea that plants can respond to sounds and vibrations? Because that might be sort of a nuanced and more new idea for a lot of people, I feel like.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because I remember a number of years ago hearing a story, I believe it was on NPR, it might have been This American Life, one of those wonderful programs that talked about plants communicating through their roots and fungus connecting a lot of those roots together. And they would signal each other like, oh, you know, we need some element over here, or there's a drought coming that's coming from this area. And they would be sharing resources and environmental information with each other. And that just started me thinking like, oh my gosh, this is wild. You know, I grew up in California, and I grew up doing a lot of activities like mountaineering and skiing and backpacking, and I spent a lot of time in nature, and I always had just a feeling that trees, plants were singing. I would almost hear it in my head while I was hiking, and I would, you know, you kind of just feel it, and I would almost talk to the trees when I was younger. So that concept kind of resonated with me, thinking, yeah, you know, I wasn't totally wrong. I wasn't nuts. There are these things happening that we are just not necessarily totally aware of. And I think now there's some research that has found plants also have things called mechanoreceptors, which can measure, respond to vibrations, sound. I mean, sound is just vibrations, right? Mm-hmm. They can respond to the environment. They can also potentially express sounds through vibrations to a small extent. And there's been, you know, some research that shows certain frequencies, plants will grow towards that frequency. And it starts to make me think, well, you know, sound is vibration. Light is vibration. You know, all atomic energy is vibration. So it's all of us have these different patterns of vibration that we respond to in terms of, you know, a human or a whale or a bug or a plant. And we really are connected in a much deeper way than I think we often recognize in our day-to-day activities.
Well, we're going to take a brief break. So you're listening to the Elchar Chronicles. Let's just take a short break. So do stay tuned.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the LCHAR Chronicles with my guest, Brent Chancellor, Executive Director and Assistant Conductor of the Reading Symphony Orchestra, and Maddie Yang, serving basically as co-host with me this afternoon, WDIY host of Environmental Minute and Roots and Resilience. So as we went off on break, we were talking about trees and how you were going through forests and et cetera, being very much outdoors. Let me go back to, so you had the composers. How did they determine, or how did you determine, because we're listening to your particular number, how did you determine which instruments to use?
So I wanted to have works done that could be performed again. And, you know, I come from a classical background. I'm a conductor and a composer, and I work with orchestras a lot. So I asked the composers to write for what could be a fairly standard ensemble that could be, you know, performed again and again. So it was, the instruments available were piano, violin one, violin two, viola, cello, bass, oboe, flute, clarinet, bassoon, percussion. And then I opened the door to electronics if they wanted to have an electronic component, which two of the composers did. Actually, I think in the end, three exited. John added an electronic track to his as well. And my thinking behind that was, you know, these are acoustic instruments that have been developed over hundreds of years, and they came from a time before electronics and a time before, you know, a lot of the technology that we're using to actually accomplish this process, you know, happened. And so I thought it was kind of a neat way to bring it back to the entire human evolution, as well as the plant experiences, going back to this, you know, relatively older instruments that had their own limitations. And in some extent, I think limitations force artists to be creative, because you kind of have to think, well, what can I do with this that expresses the ideas I'm having? And I feel like it oftentimes drives more interesting concepts when you have some of those limitations embedded in the process.
And so how did they assign, or how did you assign instruments for certain plants?
So I did not think of this in terms of an instrument has a plant correlation. I almost was thinking of the plant's experience on a cellular level. You know, one of the things we noticed when we would connect a plant is they would go through periods of really wild bursts of activity. And then they would all of a sudden stop and be really low activity. And I wasn't sure if that, you know, they're responding to the sunlight, or they're responding to uptake of nutrients, or they just going through these periods of, you know, bursts of energy that they release for growth, or then, you know, periods of rest to kind of rejuvenate. And so I started thinking of all the cellular activity that was happening inside the plant. Say when a ray of sun hit the leaf, it's, you know, all of a sudden everything starts vibrating and getting really dynamic and fast and moving throughout the plant. And in terms of like how that affected my composition, I would say the structure of the work mimics kind of the plant cycles that we were hearing, where there would be, you know, moments of really, really slow, beautiful things happening. Then there would all of a sudden be moments of bursts of energy that, you know, were almost overwhelming and exciting. And I structured my piece based on kind of that process or that concept.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm curious, what was maybe the most surprising thing you learned about plants and their communication through this project?
That's a good question. I think it is that kind of structure of being really active and then dropping off and being really almost docile, not quite dormant, but very, very low energy. Because it almost represents on a different scale, like the human wake and rest patterns, or all animals really. It's just on a smaller scale, and it happens over, you know, multiple times within an hour, for example. So we would let when we did the installation, we were running the units for, you know, 6 to 8 hours, and they would just keep going through this cycle of energy and release, energy and release. And, you know, we had multiple units connected to multiple planets. All right, sorry, planets. And they would actually almost all be on similar kind of cycles, right? So one would become active, and all of a sudden the other ones would slowly become active as well. And it reminded me of, I spent some time in Uganda recording primates in my early 20s. And I remember sitting in the forest. I was working on some biology projects as just a recording engineer. And I remember sitting in the forest for, you know, a few hours just listening and recording. And it mimicked that same dynamic where you would have, you know, maybe one animal started making a call, and that would trigger another animal, and that would trigger some insect. And then all of a sudden, there's a symphony of plants and animals making all these noises, and all of a sudden it would just stop, and it would be quiet. And then you'd just hear maybe one bird or just the wind in the leaves. And I thought it was really interesting because the same cycles of energy and quiet were happening with the electronics between all the plants as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you mentioned growing up in California and being immersed in nature and all that and having a strong connection to it. But I want to know, how has this project changed the way you view plants and the creative process you take on when creating music now?
That's a great question. As well, I think, you know, as an artist and as a person, we go through life and we absorb information, we absorb experiences, we kind of think about and reflect what happened. And even if we don't totally understand something intellectually, it becomes a part of us. And I feel like at this point, I don't totally understand what's going on with this. In terms of, like, on a deeper level, in terms of how the world is breathing and interacting with each other. But it kind of confirms some of the ideas that I felt and have felt most of my life. And now there's kind of there's almost a diagram to apply my artistic expression to that, where I say, hey, you know, we're this whole idea of energy and release, which I think is important for almost every aspect of the world, of life, of art, of nature. It just keeps replicating itself and in all these various forms. And this is kind of just another confirmation of that energy release dynamic that is life, that is art, that keeps us going and trying to explore more.
Yeah, absolutely. And so through this project, are you interested in furthering it potentially, like using different plants, testing different environments, different technology, etc.?
Yeah, so we've been discussing what to do next, and we have a few ideas. Some are with, you know, involving water, some involving ice and glaciers. You know, one of the ideas we've thought about, too, is because with MIDI, one of the things you can do is, you know, MIDI is basically, if you have like a keyboard and you press a note, that MIDI data sends a signal or records a signal that says, this is the note. Then you can assign that note a sound. And we thought, oh, you know, if we're creating or recording all this data, could we apply phonemes of speech to it and see what happens. So we've had a number of ideas that we want to experiment with. We're probably going to be doing a few more of these projects over the next few years to try to see where we can explore things, maybe going to different locations and you know, seeing, do we get similar results if we're in Europe somewhere, or in Asia, or in Australia. it would be fun to see how different environments produce different effects, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And so on the same line of like furthering this project, I'm curious, do you think that music like this could play a role potentially in like conservation or agriculture in the future?
That is a great question. Because one of the things that we did, so we, my two collaborators, Coco and Sophie, started a record label called Ona Sounds. And the function of the label, or kind of the mission of the label, is to take great art, music, and return royalties from that music that's sold to various conservation projects. So with this, all of the composers and musicians who were involved agreed to donate a portion of royalties from any streaming or sales of this back to Art Park conservation efforts. So their bigger idea is to, you know, over time create a very large label that every project is dedicated to some conservation funding. So we are, I believe, the first or second album on them. They're releasing a few albums this year additionally. I don't know in terms of agriculture how it would help. That's, I think, beyond my understanding. But in terms of conservation, I think it can definitely have a big impact.
Well, we're running short of time. So, Brent, is there anything else you would like to mention about the project or future work?
When you listen and stream, it helps support our park conservation efforts.
That will work. My guests have been Brent Chancellor, Executive Director and Assistant Conductor of the Reading Symphony Orchestra, and Maddie Yang, WDIY host of Environmental Minute and Roots and Resilience. Thank you both very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's been amazing.
Thank you. It was a wonderful conversation with you both.
This is Karen Elcharp. Thank you for tuning in to WDIY, and we'll see you next time on the Elcharp Chronicles.